Our next case for argument is Norton against Springfield. Mr. Weinberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Weinberg. I represent the plaintiffs, who are two individuals who panhandle in Springfield, Illinois, and we are challenging the constitutionality on its face of Springfield's panhandling ordinance, which essentially says the following. You can panhandle in downtown historic Springfield, but if you do, you can't speak. You can only carry a sign when asking for a donation. We think the ordinance on its face violates the First Amendment in two distinct ways. First, it is content-based. And second, it is an unreasonable time, place, manner restriction. And third, we don't think there's any basis to remand this case to the district court as the opposing side requests to allow it to offer a valid state justification. The time for that was at the preliminary injunction stage. First, as far as the content-based nature of this ordinance, it's clearly content-based on its face because it prohibits only one form of solicitation, namely immediate.
What's the significance of the regulation being content-based? Securities law is content-based. It deals with securities law, and everything the FDA does is content-based. We don't think of that as making it bad.
So
it just means it's a limited field. The thing that makes a regulation bad is if it's viewpoint-based. Is this regulation viewpoint-based?
No, this regulation is not viewpoint-based, but I think a content-based discrimination can also be a whole subject matter that's prohibited. In this case,
so do you think securities law is unconstitutional because it's content or subject matter-based?
I don't know.
It deals only with statements about securities.
And so
the FDA's rule deals only with statements about drugs. And the Food and Drug Administration, you know, their Department of Agriculture deals with statements about food. There are huge chunks of law that have limited domains, which hasn't caused people to think them invalid.
I guess my answer would be that if the subject matter, if it makes sense to distinguish, if I understand the courts, you know, security frauds need special regulations because we're talking about huge amounts of money and investor confidence and the integrity of our whole kind of capitalist system.
Right. And so it's not a First Amendment argument, though. Then it sounds like an equal protection argument, that there has to be a rational basis for thinking this kind of subject different from that kind of subject. And, of course, as this court said in Graham against Peterson, rational basis for thinking panhandling different from other kinds of activity is that many people perceive panhandlers as threatening, especially at night. That's why we sustained Indianapolis' law.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it's very hard to say there isn't a rational basis for thinking panhandling different from other kinds of money-raising activities, like soliciting charitable contributions by sending people email.
So the 2 points to that. One is that the Supreme Court and the cases that follow seem to suggest the opposite, respectfully, of what this court just suggested, which is that charitable
solicitation limitations have been upheld by the Supreme Court three times, in the Hare Krishna case, in Heffron, and in Coquinda. They've been held invalid zero times by the Supreme Court.
Those are general solicitation bans. All of those cases that you just mentioned ban all types of solicitation, charitable solicitation,
right.
Commercial solicitation.
So you're saying that Springfield got itself into trouble by allowing more speech. By allowing more speech than it needed to, Springfield made its law invalid. So what it has to do is ban extra speech in the historic downtown area. Then it's fine. Because that's what the Postal Service did in Coquinda.
I understand. So if they can say, if the Springfield can say that somehow solicitation by an individual creates different harms, serious state harms, like littering or pedestrian traffic flow obstructions, as opposed to solicitation by other solicitors, then a distinction makes sense. The truth of the matter is that the city has not offered any such distinction here between the solicitation by a panhandler or compared to solicitor for commercial interests, political interests, the signing of petitions, solicitation by other charities for future donations. In fact, I think that it's important to point out that this ordinance doesn't actually prohibit solicitations. It allows solicitations, but you have to carry only, you can't speak. You can carry a sign. And this is another irrational component of the ordinance, because there's no evidence that soliciting through a sign creates any other, soliciting through your tongue creates any special problems than soliciting to a sign would. So they could make that distinction, but there has to be a neutral and valid justification for it. And in this ordinance, there's no justification. Now, Your Honor suggests that maybe the justification, if I understand correctly, is that people are afraid of panhandlers, or they are annoyed by panhandlers and by the solicitation. And I would just say to that annoyance is not a basis to prohibit speech. If it were, of course, once upon a time, all labor activists would have been prohibited from speaking. All, you know, civil rights activists at one point, gay activists. Annoyance is to be protected, and it's a great thing that annoying speech has been protected, because it served this country well for a long, long time.
What do you think the city's interest is in doing this?
So the city's interest is in ridding the streets of panhandlers. And they knew that they couldn't rid the streets by just prohibiting panhandling. It's pretty clear that would be blatantly unconstitutional. So instead, they put this serious burden on them by not being able to speak. If you look at the legislative record, Your Honor, which is publicly available on a website that we cite in our brief, you can see that their whole purpose is to get rid of panhandlers. The sponsor of the ordinance himself, a gentleman, a representative in Springfield named Sam Canman, talks about how if we just prohibit them in the downtown historic district, this functionally will get rid of panhandlers everywhere, because the downtown historic district is the only place that it makes sense to panhandle, because that's where the restaurants are, that's where the tourists are, that's where the business activity are. And of course, it doesn't make sense to panhandle, you know, in desolate areas where there's no pedestrian traffic. So the evidence in the factual record pretty much is clear that they wanted to get rid of panhandlers. And even this ordinance, this anti-panhandling ordinance, is titled Panhandling. It's not directed to any other form of solicitation.
This is not the only commercial area in Springfield, is it?
So this is the downtown historic district, which basically matches the downtown business district. And it's a 9-block radius, and I don't think it's the only commercial area, but it is by far the main one, where the two convention centers are, where the bulk of the restaurants are, I don't know Springfield geographically, you know, to say that it's absolutely the only.
Right, the rest of the city is open.
Oh, that's
correct. All kinds of panhandling, just not nighttime panhandling and something called aggressive panhandling, which has a specific
correct, yeah,
the meaning rest, within the, so the ordinance.
That's true. The rest of Springfield is open. And on that score, I would just, you know, say that to violate people's constitutional rights in one area, even though there's available areas that and the court...
I get that. That I think sounds very familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Ezell, you make that point quite point pertinently, Your Honor.
Are the government buildings in this area?
Yes, there are. The courthouse is in that area.
Just a courthouse?
And the state capitol?
Yeah, the capital buildings, yes. The old capitol building and the new capitol building, yes.
All that is in there.
It's all in that area. It's about 9 square blocks, basically. Okay. And just the lower court in this case acknowledged that this area basically encompassed all of the business and commercial activities in Springfield.
Just as a matter of interest, does the ordinance treat politicians' request for money from contributors as a form of panhandling?
No, they don't. I mean,
are you sure? Maybe this is a form of campaign finance regulation.
Yeah, it would make for an interesting opinion, Your Honor.
I assume there are other statutes that prohibit fundraising at the state capitol.
Right. Probably yes. Fewer of them today than there were at 8 o'clock this morning, because the Supreme Court's other opinion this morning was McCutcheon, which held many campaign contribution limits unconstitutional.
Oh, okay. Well, I do think that it's sort of relevant issue, which is that for the 1% who make the most money in this country, their ability to give campaign contributions is being expanded, and their speech rights in that respect is being expanded, but for the lowest 1%, our municipalities are trying to restrict their speech rights. I think if we're going to protect people's, we should protect everybody's rights in that regard.
Well, again, this is not a comprehensive ban. It's a limited, not time restriction, but place and manner restriction on this activity. Passive panhandling is permitted.
Correct.
The city is drawing a distinction between active panhandling, which can be not just annoying, but intimidating and threatening and disruptive to both individuals and general traffic patterns and so forth. So there's obviously a rational justification for it.
And just to be clear, Your Honor, we are only talking about passive panhandling here. There is a part
that's permitted.
That is permitted, and we do not challenge. We are not extremists. We don't. We recognize that there are social rules and order that have to be followed. And in the ordinance itself, the Springfield ordinance, any obstruction with pedestrian traffic, any type of aggressive behavior is prohibited. And so, what we are just protecting is the right, or asking the court to protect, is the right of people to use their tongues to ask for...
Right, but that's what we said in the Gresham case was permissible within the realm of First Amendment doctrine.
What was permissible? The right to use
the tongue? The regulation of active panhandling. In other words, confining it to certain places within the municipality,
right,
and certain times of day,
right,
and certain manners of exercising the right to panhandle.
So
we said it was okay to restrict it to daytime hours throughout the city, and Gresham also said it's okay to restrict it to certain places. In other words, not bus stops, not cafes, not sidewalks and streets where there are lines of people queuing up for things, movie
Correct.
Tickets, etc. I mean, there are all kinds of place restrictions in that ordinance that was upheld in Gresham as well. This is just another place restriction, and it's also a manner restriction on the way you can do it. You can do it passively, you just can't do it actively in the form of verbal solicitation.
So you're right, there are restrictions that have been upheld, and we're not challenging the bulk of those restrictions. The only thing that I want this court to be able to distinguish appropriately Gresham from the Springfield ordinance, and in Gresham, the court said you can ban panhandling at night and require people only to use a sign to panhandle. And the reason you can do that is because they have alternative channels to panhandle during the day, that's available. The Springfield Ordinance prohibits the vocal request 24/7.
Well, right. So did some of the provisions of the ordinance in question in Gresham, which is in Indianapolis. It carved out panhandle-free zones where you can't panhandle at all,
well,
just like this one does.
Just certain... No, well, my understanding is that they carve out, like, you can't panel within 20 feet of an ATM, you can't panel at a bus depot, but those are very narrow...
Cafes.
Cafes, exactly.
Outside
yeah.
of cafes.
Outside cafes.
Bus stops.
Nobody's challenging those, but in this
case,
right.
Those
this is
are
a
place
nine
restriction.
Block.
This is a place restriction. It's just a different kind of place restriction.
Well, I'd say it's a different kind in quality and substance in every way to take out the whole nine-block radius of the heart of the city. It doesn't make sense to panel anywhere else. I'll if there's no more questions, I'll...
Well, did you calculate what percentage of the downtown Indianapolis area was covered by these exclusion zones?
So
it could actually have worked out to quite a lot.
So by the exclusion zones, are you...
My question is simple. Did you try to calculate what percentage of downtown Indianapolis was covered by that ordinance?
No, I've never been to downtown Indianapolis.
You don't have to be to downtown Indianapolis. There are novel devices known as maps.
So if you're referring to exclusion zones like near ATMs, is that what you're referring to?
No, look, the court asks the questions. The lawyer doesn't ask the questions.
Okay.
Your time has expired, counsel.
Before you go, if your time's expired, I'm just curious. Is other than the restriction for verbal and money right now, is there any other restriction?
On panhandlers or on solicitation?
Over panhandlers.
There are restrictions, as the court said, about certain locations like...
Okay, so that include in Springfield?
Yes, in Springfield, yeah. There's a whole called an aggressive panhandling portion which prohibits certain locations and certain manner. No profanity, no touching, no following as well.
And then someone approaches... panhandler and initiates a conversation, there's no limitation in their response, is there?
No, this would prohibit that too.
You mean if someone comes up and said, what's your name, or you know, just somebody who's really nice, I think all of us know places here in Chicago where you might see someone pretty often and may say something to them. They don't stop you. If someone comes up to a person that you're representing and initiate something. Well, where are you from? Or, you know, why are you here? Or is there something I could help you with or something? They can't respond, you say.
Well, the ordinance on its face prohibits the request for a donation. So, of course, they can respond to a question about where you're from, but they can't initiate a request for a donation.
No, but if someone says, well, do you need some money, can they respond yes?
Well, that's a good question. I think that's up in the air, but this law,
they didn't ask.
They could certainly do it if they have a sign that says yes.
Yeah, well, I think the sign says something like that. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Ron.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Ron. I am an assistant corporation counsel for the city of Springfield, and it's my privilege in this case to represent the city as well as the individual named defendants.
Just as a matter of curiosity, did you do the calculation that Judge Sykes and I asked Mr. Weinberg about?
We have not yet, Your Honor, and that's one of the points
not
that we
yet.
Have. That's one of the points that we have in this case.
Engaged there has in discovery been, on that issue?
There has been no discovery. There has been no evidence taken in this case. The motion for preliminary injunction was filed the day after the lawsuit was filed.
Yes,
we have no evidence.
Wait. Now I'm lost. The district court's decision was quite some number of months ago. What's supposed to happen when a preliminary injunction is denied is that then proceedings go on a pace in the district court to get to raise evidence and make a decision on a preliminary, on a permanent injunction.
You are correct, Your Honor.
And I gather that
plaintiffs,
this case has been stalled. That's
plaintiffs
not supposed
have requested
to be what
to stay. Plaintiffs requested all proceedings be stayed during the pendency. So what we have is a situation where the plaintiffs decided when to bring this preliminary injunction before any discovery, before any facts were presented, and they precluded any proceeding for it. If I could answer some of the court's questions with fact as opposed to speculation, in answer to your question as to whether or not a political contribution would be prohibited, the ordinance is very clear. Any person who requests an immediate donation of money is defined as panhandling. What is not defined as panhandling is continuing a conversation where somebody comes up and speaks to a person and asks them. There's nothing that prevents them under the Act from continuing a conversation, from initiating contact with a sign, continuing it with that. Your Honors, this This case has largely been decided by this court in Gresham v. Peterson. There's only two real differences here. One, in Gresham, the plaintiffs conceded what they probably thought was the weakest part of their argument, that it was content-based. And secondly, we have the downtown historic district. I think, Your Honor...
Well, that raises another one of my questions. Does politicians' effort to raise funds in the downtown historic district amount to panhandling under the ordinance?
Yes. Whether or
this
not
will be interesting.
Whether or not there would be jurisdiction within state
have
buildings,
been,
I do not know.
Have there been prosecutions against politicians for asking lobbyists for money within the halls of the Capitol?
I do not believe we would have jurisdiction within state buildings.
I'm not
this
sure
is
what
just
that means.
A this is just a city ordinance. This is not a state law.
Right. There are state laws that prohibit political fundraising on
that is correct.
In state buildings.
That is correct. And frankly, I'll be honest with you. I am not aware of any enforcement of the city ordinance to enforce campaign contribution law, and I would be very shocked if there were. But by the terms, yes, the ordinance
well,
is broad.
That might sound like real content or maybe even viewpoint discrimination, but politicians can raise funds in the downtown historic district, but no one else can.
I didn't say they could. That would indeed violate the...
No. What you've said is they can't, no one else can, but we're going to enforce the ordinance against people walking on the street, and we aren't going to enforce it against politicians.
I guarantee we would enforce it against politicians as well. The question is, does that occur on the street? And there is no evidence that it does occur on the street with passersby. As opposed to within a state office.
Or how about within a cafe? Member of the legislature goes to lunch with a lobbyist, makes a request for money in the historic district.
Gets a ticket.
Perhaps it would.
What if someone's running for office since I had occasion to serve in a legislature, there are some people who most people would think they got no business running for anything, and yet they are. And they might be someone who would solicit a political contribution on the street, maybe thinking that there are some people that might be interested in their campaign or something. Because I think that's what my only questions is, as far as the restrictions is how far they extend. And I would have to know more what the city's real interest is in having this. I mean, I think your opponent recited some stuff. Is there some specific interest that they want about tourism and disruption and stuff like that?
Yes, Your Honor. They have identified the downtown historic district as a special tourist location destination. I would offer some differences with the assertions by plaintiff's counsel that constitutes all of Springfield. Plaintiff's counsel obviously has not been to downtown Springfield recently. There, with regard to the majority of restaurants, absolutely not. With regard to hotels, there's 5 hotels in the historic district. There's 36 hotels in town. It does have the Lincoln's Tomb, or I'm sorry, it does have the Lincoln's Home, the Lincoln Museum, and the Capitol Complex. It doesn't have the Lincoln's Tomb, the State Fairgrounds. It doesn't have the Department of Revenue, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of
Health and
Human
Services. Well, I know why
it doesn't
have the Department of Revenue, because under this definition, everything the Department of Revenue does is panhandling.
No, the Department of Revenue does this with written statutes and written requests for donation that are not prohibited by the ordinance.
Future, not immediate.
Anyway, the Department of Revenue usually doesn't have any money anyway, so... That's the problem. Always
that may well be true. So I would suggest that, Your Honors, that this case is very, I mean, it's obviously the ordinance is, identical to the ordinance that was upheld in Gresham, with one difference, with the addition of the downtown historic district.
Right. There is one other difference, which is that the parties in Gresham stipulated that the ordinance there, the Indianapolis ordinance, was not content-based in the relevant sense, in other words, in the constitutional sense.
That is correct. And that is one question that the plaintiffs have not waived or conceded. I would suggest that, as Your Honor alluded earlier, to suggest that looking at words, anything that looks at words makes it content-based, is way too broad. We regulate slander, and you can only tell if something is slander by looking at the words and
right.
see if it,
really
it was false.
It depends more on whether the law in question discriminates as to the message.
That is correct, and
I think, in this respect,
it is content-neutral. It doesn't matter who the deliverer of the message is. It doesn't matter on whose behalf the message is delivered. It is a request for an immediate donation, regardless of the purpose for that.
So
that makes it content.
A politician holding a fundraiser in one of those five hotels or in one of the restaurants, as Judge Easterbrook
would
point out, would be covered?
I would suggest that that wouldn't be a verbal request for a donation, because that would be an organized event that was people were invited to and the donations
people
were requested.
People pay at the door.
Pardon me? Yes,
there's a lot of words.
There's nothing in the ordinance that prohibits accepting an immediate donation. It only prohibits verbally requesting that.
A member of the state legislature sits down over lunch with a lobbyist and asks for money.
Do members of the state legislature
know how this ordinance affects them in the view of the Corporation Council of the City of Springfield?
I don't think. What the ordinance prohibits is initiating contact with a request for money.
Yeah, well,
I don't think that's the case in those situations. I honestly don't believe I would win that case. If two people went to lunch and had a conversation, and as part of that conversation, the ordinance clearly says when you initiate a contact with a verbal request for a donation, whether or not it covers other activity, you know, I can't speculate here. I can tell you what the language of the ordinance actually does do, and we can, you know, speculate as to other things that it might cover as well. If those cases are brought to the Corporation Council, we'll evaluate and prosecute them. But at this point, all the ordinance does is prohibit.
I can just imagine the Corporation Council salting a waiter into one of these downtown eateries, right? Planting a waiter on the staff. And when the waiter hears the request for money, pouncing, writing not the restaurant check, but the ticket for violation of the panhandling ordinance.
You can imagine that. I doubt that would happen. And again, I don't think that's prohibited. Carrying on a conversation is not prohibited by the Act. The plaintiffs want to suggest that because you're asking for an immediate donation, that first of all, that discriminates against people who don't have addresses or that. Well, a large part of our speculative questioning today belies that, because it also apparently applies to a politician who would ask for it if they would initiate the conversation that way. But I would also suggest that the plaintiff's own evidence,
maybe,
the affidavit...
Maybe that's what the politician would say. It isn't a request for an immediate donation because he's asking the lobbyist to write a check when he gets back to his office, which isn't immediate.
A request for a future payment is not covered by the ordinance. That is correct. So as Mr. Norton testified in his affidavit, he frequently takes jobs mowing lawns and painting houses. That type of a solicitation is permitted. Can I have a job? Can I mow your lawn? Will you? And you pay me when I'm done with that. That is permitted under the ordinance.
Are these people admitted panhandlers? Because I'm getting blurry now on what the definition of a panhandler is. If a panhandler is somebody who self-identifies as being a panhandler, does that require that kind of an admission? Because we know, I think we see people who are clearly, at least in my hometown, they stand on the side of the road with signs, but we can't have everybody who's asking for money in sometimes legitimate or maybe even illegitimate purposes if they are not identified as a panhandler.
Your Honor, in this case, they have admitted to being panhandlers.
Is that a necessary? Is that a condition preceding to this?
No, I do not believe so, Your Honor. I think because panhandling in our ordinance is also defined as a term of art, so to speak, there is a specific definition of panhandling in our ordinance. And in order to be found guilty under the ordinance, you have to fit that definition of panhandling.
How does a politician or somebody else other than a panhandler, as we know them, I guess generic, how does that encompass other people? People who I don't want to exaggerate, but Boy Scouts and other things that people might want to do something for, you know, their project.
Yes, and that's what makes this ordinance content neutral. If any organization that initiates a request in the Downtown Historic District for initiates a verbal request for an immediate contribution has violated the panhandling ordinance. We don't discriminate on whether it's the Boy Scouts, whether it's the Salvation Army, or whether it's an indigent person.
Salvation Army people ringing the bell, I suppose.
Ringing a bell is passive solicitation, okay, which is allowed under the ordinance.
That's the equivalent of a sign, I guess.
That's the equivalent of a sign.
But other forms of verbal charitable fundraising within this zone fall within this ordinance.
I would suggest any form of fundraising that requests an immediate donation and with the contact being initiated by a verbal request for the immediate donation is violative of the ordinance. Without anything further, I will exceed my last 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our fourth case for argument this morning.